This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. If you've ever been tucked into bed, you've probably heard some version of this tender but horrifying advice.
Good night, Lisa.
Good night, Mom.
Sweet dreams.
Thanks, Mom.
Sleep tight.
I will, Mom.
Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Well, Marge, most of us won't let the bedbugs bite if we had a choice, but the critters are getting harder to avoid. The bedbug population has increased at an alarming rate in the last decade. Urban entomologist Kobe Schall has an idea why. He's found that unlike other species, bedbugs have the ability to inbreed and thrive. Kobe Schall is a professor at North Carolina State University and joins us now to talk about insect incest. Kobe, welcome. State of Things. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here with you, Frank.
So what is a bedbug, first of all?
So a bedbug is a type of insect. It's very much related to many insects that we're familiar with that suck on plants, such as cicadas, aphids, stink bugs, the same group of insects.
And it's but it's not like, and it feeds on us, and that's our problem. It gets into bedding and that sort of thing, and it loves to eat blood.
Exactly. Just like these other insects that have piercing, sucking mouth parts and feed on plants, the bedbug does the same thing, except instead of feeding on plants, it feeds on humans, and it has a great love for human blood.
And how is it not a flea?
Oh, it's a very different group from fleas. I mean, they have the same feeding behavior. They both feed on humans, but taxonomically, they're very different groups. And of course, mosquitoes are also another group of insects that feed on humans and on blood. But again, the mosquitoes are more related to flies, and the bedbugs are more related to cicadas and aphids.
And famously, as their name would indicate, bedbugs live in bedding, right? And they somehow manage to hang out there.
Bedbugs associate with humans. They like to be – they're lazy. They like to be close to where the food is, and the food is human. So they like to – and they're nocturnal. So they bite us, and they take our blood when at night when we sleep. So they like to associate with a bed, but not exclusively. A very common misconception is that if you have a bed bug infestation and you get rid of your mattress or your box spring, that you have gotten rid of the bed bugs. And that is absolutely not true. The bed bugs will associate with other portions of the bed, the bed frame, the headboard, the nightstand. And as the bed bug infestation gets larger and larger, they spread to other parts of the room, other parts of the apartment. And if you tend to watch TV in the living room and fall asleep, they figure that out and they'll associate with the living room couch.
They find you. So how bad is the infestation? We've seen lots of reports that there's been an explosion in the bedbug population lately.
Well, we went through a period of about 4 or 5 decades where we have not seen bedbugs. Our parents and grandparents were experts in bedbug control. Back in the DDT era, they controlled bedbugs. Bedbugs were quite common, and they controlled bedbugs with DDT and related compounds. And we essentially got rid of bedbugs for about 40 or 50 years. And in the last 15 years or so, there's been a huge resurgence of bedbugs throughout the United States and actually globally. The resurgence in some parts of the world, in Australia and in Canada, actually preceded the huge resurgence here in the United States. And they're continuing to increase. Based on media coverage, you would think that they're declining because there was huge media coverage about the summer before last. And this past summer, there was less media coverage. So the public thinks that we are taking care of the bedbug problem. But in fact, that's not the case. I think of it as the tip of the iceberg. The bedbugs continue to proliferate and continue to be a problem.
Well, so why is that? Why have they come back?
We think that they've come back due to globalization, the internationalization of transport and commerce. So we think that they've come from places where they have been selected for insecticide resistance, and because the bedbugs that we see in the United States are, by and large, almost all of them are resistant to the commonly used insecticides. So very likely they came from places where they were selected for insecticide resistance, and they're proliferating because it's so difficult to control them.
And is that because, and again, I guess this would be a hypothesis, but possibly because we've become, there is more intensified use of insecticides in tropical areas, say for malaria and other vector diseases?
Precisely. That's exactly what we think. And again, that's a hypothesis. It's not a conclusion. In the United States, we use pyrethroid insecticides in spray cans against cockroaches especially, but we primarily use those insecticides in the kitchen. And bed bugs are not found in a kitchen. They're primarily in the bedroom. So it's extremely unlikely that bed bugs have locally resurged and have locally developed insecticide resistance because they've not been strongly selected in the United States for pyrethroid resistance. Whereas in tropical countries throughout the world, in South America, Central America, Africa, Southeast Asia, there's been a huge increase in the use of pyrethroid insecticides in a sense of spraying the inside of homes against mosquitoes that carry malaria and dengue fever and other diseases, as well as using pyrethroids to impregnate bed nets that have been tremendous, are used tremendously throughout the world now, throughout tropical regions.
So they survived. That suggests some kind of genetic adaptation, which we think of as requiring genetic diversity. But your finding is that they don't need it at all.
Yeah, so there are really two aspects to genetic diversity. One is that when we sample bed bug populations from throughout the United States, we find that their genetic diversity is actually quite high. And that suggests to us that the bed bugs are coming from various places, not a single source, various places, and they're invading different parts of the United States independently of each other. In other words, we are sort of rejecting the idea that a single introduction of bed bugs occurred somewhere, let's say New York City, for example, and then spread from New York City to all other parts of the United States. That type of hypothesis would show a very different genetic signature than what we're seeing. But the inbreeding comes into play when we look at bed bug infestations in a single apartment or in a single building. We find the opposite. We find extremely low genetic diversity. And that suggests to us that that infestation started from a very, very small group of bed bugs that were introduced into the apartment or the apartment building. Possibly even a single female that was mated and gave birth to sons and daughters that could mate with each other.
Well, we've come to think that this kind of inbreeding leads to the collapse of the population ultimately. What do you think is happening with bedbugs?
That's a really interesting question. So in most animals, especially vertebrates, but in many insects as well, there's a concept called inbreeding depression, whereas when brother-sister matings occurs repeatedly over many generations, the population will collapse. Because of the accumulation of mutations in that population. But in some insects, especially insects that associate with humans, and especially we think in flightless insects that don't have the opportunity to move around and find a mate outside from another population, and that would include bedbugs that don't have wings, it would include cockroaches that don't fly, they seem to be able to withstand the detrimental effects of inbreeding. So in a building that we examined in New Jersey, for example, the building had been infested for 5 to 6 years. The bedbug population is extremely non-diverse genetically, suggesting that they have been sort of inbreeding brother-sister matings for the past 5 or 6 years. And that's many generations.
Many, many generations, right? A generation may be how long for
The bedbug generation is about a month, depending on temperature, of course, because insects are cold-blooded, but it's about a month.
So how does it work? You brought some bedbugs with you there, and maybe you can describe how you feed them in the lab, and can you get a bedbug? You can stay right there and just describe what you've got in that little
jar. So we raise a huge number of bedbugs. We raise bed bugs on blood, but we don't use any animals. We only use animal blood. So we use rabbit blood. We contain the bed bugs in a plastic container with a nylon screen on top. And by putting that nylon screen against a membrane on the other side of which is rabbit blood, the bed bugs will pierce the membrane and suck on the blood.
So if I put that right up against my skin here, let me try that, and just put it right there. Put it up to the microphone right there. Let's see what. Gosh. Oh, my. Oh, there's 80 of them. But honestly now, how are they dangerous? How worried should I be about what just happened to me here?
They're dangerous in a couple of senses. First, let me say why they're less dangerous than mosquitoes or ticks. They are not known to carry any human pathogens. So they're not known to vector to transmit any human diseases. However, the bites can be extremely allergenic. Many people have very severe allergic responses to them, all the way to anaphylactic shock that can result. Many people respond to bedbug bites by scratching a lot, and that can result in secondary infections. So these are sort of clear effects of bedbugs. But the psychological effects of bedbugs are very severe and very underestimated. Bedbugs cause a huge amount of sleeplessness, anxiety, social isolation, all sorts of social stigma associated with having bedbugs. So that's a real cost to society, we think.
Well, I want to thank you so much for bringing us up to date, Dr. Shaul. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Kobe Shaul is an urban entomologist and a professor at North Carolina State University. This is The State of Things. We're going to be in Greensboro Tuesday, December 13th. Triad reporter Jeff DeBeery is going to be there and bring us up to date. Talk to a filmmaker whose father investigated the Greensboro KKK, all of that and more. If you want to be there in the audience December 13th when we're in Greensboro, just send us a note, rsvp@wunc.org, if you want to be in the audience next Tuesday at noon. Just ahead, Asheville native Warren Haynes rocked his hometown for the holidays on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.